Hey there, friends. Welcome to the Being Brown and Bold podcast. We're so glad you're here for all of our amazing conversations about stepping out of our comfort zone, being bold, and taking chances. And now, here's your host, Jess Thomas.
Today, I am chatting with Jyoti Chand, also known as Mama Jyotes on the socials. She is an author, an influencer, definitely a funny mom. But what I also love about her is she totally advocates for self-care, self-love, and maternal mental health. She has got a background in stand-up comedy and improv, which totally explains why her videos are so hilarious. So many women find her relatable because of her honesty on the socials. She shares the reality of motherhood and influences her audience to find the joy in their lives and shares all the things that make her life better and easier. She also has a master's in fine arts in writing for children and young adults from Hanline University. And exciting news, her first book, Fitting Indian, will be released this summer. She is also already working on her second book amongst a plethora of other projects. Jyoti was born and raised in the suburbs of Los Angeles and now lives with her husband and three children in the suburbs of Chicago. Jyoti, it is so great to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Okay, let's get started. First, I think in brown culture, names are important. So tell us about your name, how to pronounce it properly, and what it means.
Okay, this is so important to me because I was literally Jyoti until maybe like 2020, and I corrected my name. So my name is actually Jyoti, which is a correct pronunciation. And for the longest time, people called me Jyoti, and I was completely fine with it. And then I even introduced myself that way just because it was easier. But I realized that I now take the time to just tell people my name. It's Jyoti. And it means flame of light because I was born on July 4th. So my parents were all like artsy and creative like that.
That's awesome. What I heard is if white people can say Timothy Chalamet, whatever, how come they can't say our names? So for people listening who actually don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself. What does it mean to be Jyoti?
Well, first of all, I'm a mom. I'm a mom of three kids. I just had my third baby. I want to say just, but he's 10 months old and he's growing so quickly. And it is the most phenomenal thing ever to experience this again for the third and final time. As much as I want a fourth baby, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. But other than that, I'm also a writer and an author. I've been writing for as long as I can remember. And that's a really big part of who I am. With my undergrad in creative writing, as well as my master's, I mean, that's like been my dream to publish a book. So this year is just like so exciting. And it's coming out actually November 15th of 2024. And then I am an influencer and I love what I do. I love, connecting with my community and through DMs and events, and also just being able to work with brands that I like absolutely love. It truly is like my dream job.
What's the difference between being an influencer and a digital content creator?
Well, practically the same thing. But as an influencer, I feel like, I guess you could technically, I'm a content creator also. I create content for brands and stuff. So I think they're interchangeable, to be honest.
Okay. I wasn't sure if they were making that term because people felt like, oh, influencer feels, I don't know, like you're influencing people, but like negatively. And so if you're a content creator, it sounds, I don't know, more professional. I wasn't sure because I was like, wait, did the terms change?
No, I think they're just interchangeable.
Got it. Well, we focus on brown culture here, and which is very vast. So tell us a little bit about your cultural heritage and how that informs your life and your work.
Oh my God, it's so important to me. So I'm actually Indo-Burmese. So my family's from Burma, but we're Punjabi. So both sides of my family. And then my husband's family is also from Burma. And so we're very Burmese in this house. Everyone speaks Burmese except for me, which is fun. And then I speak Punjabi and Hindi. I grew up Hindu with mix of Buddhism. Like it was very like intertwined, my cultures. So Indo-Burmese is a culture within itself. They have a whole community of people. And it plays a huge role in my writing. Obviously, write what you know. It's so funny because when I first started writing and I entered my master's program, I wrote with white people. Like I wrote with white characters and put the brown people in like the side.
Wow.
You know, like they weren't the main characters because I never really saw myself as a main character. I guess I should say undergrad. Because the first play I wrote in, it was like a short play. It ended up being about like a brown mom and a brown daughter. And the daughter coming out to her mom being a lesbian. And that was like my first like short play, won a festival and everything. And I was like, oh, I should write with people of my own, like what I understand. And so I finally started writing our stories or my stories. And that's where I kind of started seeing more of like people resonating and understanding, because like every teacher will tell you, write what you know, right? So it really plays a huge role into my writing. Fitting Indian is obviously about like a young Indian woman. She's 16 and struggling with her mental health, and it touches upon the South Asian diaspora and the stigma with mental health in that, you know, realm, and the generational trauma. Like it really like encompasses it all into this one story. And I'm really excited. And Natasha goes through this, that's my character's name. And she goes through this whole struggle as a teenage girl coming out on the other side, better, brighter, and more close to her family. So I really do. I'm really excited about that. So yeah, plays will be a huge role.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because now that you say that, I'm like, I know I was in like some literature club when I was in junior high school, and I remember the one poem I wrote that got published was about a white girl. But I grew up in an Irish Italian Catholic neighborhood, so I don't know if like just automatically I thought, because I was like white on the weekdays and Indian on the weekends. Did you grow up in a mixed neighborhood?
I did. I grew up with a lot of Hispanic people and Filipino people. And so naturally everyone was brown. And so nobody really kind of like in the beginning, I actually thought I was Mexican until I was like 5. I swear. I was like, I look like everyone else. You know?
And I love tacos and nachos.
And I, you know, like, me gustan los tacos de pollo, you know, like I love it all. Like, you know, and so growing up in like La Puente, West Covina area, you're surrounded by Hispanic culture. Whether it's getting tamales in the parking lot or eating chicharrones on the roadside, like everything was just like that. So like, that's a huge part of my upbringing too. And celebrating Christmas at midnight with my mom's best friend, who's Mexican, and their family. And like, I've been to church for that. And so, yeah, I grew up in a diverse, meaning not white, area, you know. It was very rare to see actual white people. My best friend was the whitest person, and she was half Mexican.
Wow. But then your characters were white in your stories originally?
Yeah.
That's so wild.
Because that's what I read.
Yeah.
Right? So I was an avid reader growing up. One of my favorite authors from the time I could read words was Judy Blume.
Yes.
And every character of Judy Blume's was Caucasian. Yeah. And every character in every book as a young adult reader was not anything but white. Like barely were they Hispanic. And so the first book that I read that actually encouraged me to be like, oh, maybe I can be a writer, was Born Confused by Thanuja Desai Hadlier. I don't know if you've ever read the book, but it's a fat ass book. And I love her. I've actually gotten to like converse with her now, and like she's a homie, and I love that. But she was such a huge inspiration for me. She wrote this book about a 15-year-old Indian girl. It was called Born Confused. She's, you know, struggling with her duality, her dual identity, and very relatable. Very like, I remember I scarfed it down. Like I read this book in like 36 hours, and it was like the thickest book ever. And I was like, wow. And I like remember craving. I was craving more stories like that. I was like looking in the library, like, are there any more books about Indian people? Are there any more young adult books for people like me? And there really weren't. And so that was one of those harsh realities. I was like, maybe they don't publish books like us. And so I didn't even try writing in that way, because I was like, oh, I'm not going to get published if I write like that. And then now it's the exact opposite in publishing, I feel like. Yeah. I feel like and I'm so happy they're embracing diversity. They're like, we want diversity. We want to put more books on the shelf with people who feel like they're heard and seen and represented. It's like a dream come true.
Yeah. So then when you were little, What did you imagine your life would be like as an adult? Did you imagine, okay, I'm going to be this writer, or you not even just vocationally, but like every other aspect? Because
How little? Because when I was little, like 5 to 8, I was going to be president of the United States of America.
Wow.
So that's what my grandpa always told me. He's like, you're going to be president. You're going to become a mayor, and then you're going to be president.
You were born here on this soil for this purpose.
Yeah. And so I learned quickly, I never wanted to go into law. I was like, as I was growing up, I really, really wanted to be in the entertainment industry, which is so funny because I'm in the entertainment industry now, technically.
Right.
In a different way than I ever thought I could be. So vocationally, my goal was to be like a news anchor. Mm. I applied to University of San Diego for their broadcasting program. It's one of the best in the country. I did not get in. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go to UC Riverside. That's where I got in. And I'm going to go pre-med. I don't know why, but I was like, okay, fine, mom, dad, I didn't get in. I must not be good enough. I'm going to go to pre-med. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly changed my major to creative writing. It was a no-brainer. Like, it doesn't matter how good I was at math and science, my heart wasn't in it. And then as I was growing up, I did auditions. I did photo shoots. I auditioned for all that when Amanda Bynes left. Like,
wow.
I really wanted to be in that comedy space, in that entertainment space. And I just didn't know. For a while, I thought, oh, that's just like everyone in LA who grew up here. Like, once there, but really, it was just like this urge inside of me to like, I needed to fulfill this. So Instagram changed the game for me, which was amazing because I left LA and then was able to find success in the entertainment industry, which is insane to me. But otherwise, how I saw my life is I've always wanted to be a mom.
Yeah.
Which is just like, I've just like loved babies, little babies, like Keshav, like since I was a baby. Like, I feel like I just like always gravitated toward, I had this motherly instinct. Gravitated towards little babies, wanted to change diapers at 10. Like, I wanted to do all the things. Yeah. Like, my daughter's the same way. And I just knew off the bat, like, I'm going to be a mom. I thought I was going to be a mom at like 23 because my mom was a mom at 23. Right. And so I just assumed I was going to get married and be a mom. And, and then marriage seemed like the furthest thing from my mind for a while. Cause I was doing stand-up comedy, and then I met my husband and I was like, oh, now's the time. I literally married him thinking, okay, I married an Indian doctor. I can now quit life and become a stay-at-home wife and then have babies. And me and my husband laugh about this because he's like, when I married you, I knew because your ass couldn't sit down and you were so ambitious that you were never just going to give up your creative career. I acted like I was going to. I was like, Don, I don't want to do this. And yeah, no. There was no part of me that could give it up. So,
yeah, that's wild. Do you feel, I know that I felt this when I was growing up here, that I don't even think it was pressure. I think I just naturally assumed my steps are, I'm gonna have to be excellent in school so I can get an excellent job and climb the corporate ladder, you know, whatever corporate means to people. And yeah, sure, one day I might get married and have kids, but to the opposite where, no, that was like one of your life goals is I'm going to, do you feel like people thought, well, you're so backwards. I mean, that's
no,
that's
I think
not
that
American.
My parents made it very clear that I was going to get married.
Mm.
It was like, my parents were like, you're going to do all kinds of great things, but you're going to get married kind of thing. And I remember 24, freshly out of like a long-term relationship with a boyfriend, a boyfriend that I lived with, I was just like so depressed. Cause I was just like, what? Like, this was supposed to be it, you know, that kind of thing. And I was going on a Euro trip. So I like was going to go backpack through Europe and do my whole like find myself at 24 thing. And my mom's like, when you get back, you're going to be 25 years old. We're going to help you find a husband kind of vibe. Mm. And at this point, my career was stand-up comedy and I ran my own tutoring business. So to my parents, they didn't really see that as career driven. Like, they were like, cool, she can take care of herself. She can pay for her own stuff. She pays for her car. She pays for her apartment. That's awesome. She's super independent. But this isn't like a long-term, like, it didn't, honestly, tutoring is a great career, if I'm being honest. It makes a ton of money and people don't realize how much you can make doing concierge tutoring, but I was doing great.
Yeah.
And I actually got us through a residency and fellowship because of my tutoring. And Yeah, so I carried our weight there. And so my parents at that time, creative careers weren't really seen as anything that was put a roof over our head. And so they were very adamant about me finding the right partner.
Right.
And I was very adamant about doing everything they said, but like the opposite of everything they said. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go to Europe and I'm going to live my life. Then my husband walked into my life and everything changed. I was like, maybe mom is right.
Aww.
Maybe this is the guy. And he was the guy. And I'm so glad that I went with my heart on that one and not with my head, as my head was just like, no, 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 you got to do the stand-up thing. You got to do this now. Now's the time. You can't do this later. And that was the hardest thing, was allowing myself to believe that we had an expiration date on when we can achieve our goals. And that right there is like the biggest lie I've ever been told. You know, this whole like 30 under 30 list, 35 under 35, 40 under 40. Cool. They did it. I'm so happy for them. But that is not the only way. My book that I thought was going to come out at 25 is coming out at 36. And like, that's really fine. It's just as exciting.
Okay. So you had all these dreams. And I think as a woman, it's true that we get to do so many different things in our lifetime. And everything doesn't have to be today. But I think when you're young, you think, oh, there is this timeline. And I don't know if we picture ourselves older doing things. Like, I didn't become a personal chef until I was like 40. And then I got my recipe published in Food and Wine and Wall Street, New York Times when I was 51. And
how old are you? You look so young.
Thank you. I'm 52. But you know, we're going to look like this until we're like 80, and then we're going to turn into Yoda like the next minute. So
I love it. I love our skin.
It's one of like the perks about being brown is we get to look like this, but thank you. And my kids are grown. So I'm watching your life because I also married a doctor. We met his first year of med school and we got married his third year of med school and raised my children. I had two during residency and we adopted one like a couple years after that. And now they're all grown and they're adults. And it's weird because I see your stage. I'm like, I want to smush them. But they're so big. They're not as smushable.
But they'll smush them, I hope.
Yeah. And now I have nieces and nephews that I can smush. They're so smushable. Like, I want them to move to Los Angeles and make money off their faces because they're so cute. And everybody needs to see.
Right. That's how I feel about my kids. I'm like, you guys are adorable. But then I'm like, nah, mommy's got to put herself out there first. Okay.
Right. Right. So, and in fact, I was this whole concept of 40 and 40, 30 and 30. I just was hearing this concept. What about the 80 over 80? Like the people who stick with it for the long run. So I think there is something about honoring the older culture that we've kind of lost. And then in our own path to life, I feel like we feel this rush of we got to do it all and we got to do it right now. And you're right. It's a complete lie. We have a lot of years to do all of it.
And it's crazy because we're told that we're going to like, growing up, we're told, okay, you're going to have this one career and you're going to have it for the rest of your life. And it's like, no, like you don't have to do that.
Right.
You can be a bartender in your 20s or a tutor in your 20s, and you can be an influencer in your 30s, and you can just be an author in your 40s and don't do anything on screen. And you can be a producer in your 50s. You can change career. Best example, Mindy Kaling. She's one of my favorite examples because she's like, okay, well, I started as a writer for a show. Then I wrote my own show. Then I became an actress in the show, right? In The Office, when she was writing for the show, she was an actress in it. Then she had her own show. She was an actress. Now she doesn't even act. She's like, now I'm a book publisher and a producer. Lord knows what she'll do in the future, you know? Yeah.
And sometimes she throws in foodie influencer when she's cooking.
No, I love that.
In there. And I love that you can do that. And in fact, you started doing that too. I was like, yeah, I want to see what you're cooking. This is what I love about you. You're just you. And different influencers do different things, but you're just living your life and you're willing to show us parts of it. I think that's the other thing people don't realize. You're not showing us your whole life because you have your parts that are just for you and your family, but you're still real.
I really do. Like, there's not much more to it. The cooking thing was recent because a lot of people were messaging. They're like, oh my God, you need to put up recipes in your house. And I felt so like imposter syndrome because I was like, I'm not a food blogger. No, I cook amazingly. I love my food, but I also am not like someone who's like going to be like, put 1/4 a teaspoon. I'm just like, thoda this, thoda that, 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 that. I'm a very like Indian mom cook.
Right.
Like I don't cook in that way. So I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to put it up like that. But I'm not going to give you measurements. I'm going to be like, okay, put a little bit and a lot of it.
And I think that's great because I think that's actually how most people cook because they don't have time to measure everything. And so, but anyway, the whole point is you're just living your life and you invite us into it and things that work for you, you share. And we're like, oh, if that works for her, maybe it'll work for me. And I love how when things don't work for you, you're honest about that also. Yeah.
Also very important because people need to know, like if you're seeing an ad over and over again, I'm going to tell you that it didn't work for me. And some people will be like, oh, but it worked for me. I'm like, that's great, but it didn't work for me. And that's what they want to know.
You know, you have these dreams for your life and your future. Did you feel like you fit in with your friend group or people your age that maybe had dreams different from you?
No, everyone's a doctor. No, my brother, my eldest brother, kind of like me, was a black sheep and did something completely different. He's like now running like a whole division of Frito-Lay, which is crazy. He just did the Super Bowl. Like he was like head up because he's in Vegas. And then my other brother went to podiatry school. And so he's living his best medical life. And then majority of my cousins on one side are physicians. And then the other side, we were all like a little bit more different. My dad's side. I got a cousin who's a pilot. I got a, like for commercial airlines. And I have a cousin who owns hotels, right? Which is not common for Punjabis. They're one that's in medicine and that's about it on that side. So like, there's like all these cool things happening on one side. And then a lot of cool different specialties of medicine on the other side. Really, no one was an artist. I had like maybe two cousins that decided they wanted to go into direct, and I didn't grow up like that close with them, but I at least had that little connection of like, oh, we both are, we're artists. It wasn't very common. So to be one of the only people in your family to get a bachelor's of arts and a master's of fine arts instead of a BS and an MS, it was pretty, you're just like, oh, did I waste my money? Am I going to be able to do anything with this degree? Right? Like what job can I do? Am I just going to teach? Which is great, but not what I wanted to do. I just hope that people can see that like you can achieve from those things, that I don't regret getting my degree. I don't regret paying for a master's or an undergrad in creative writing because I learned so much. I did my undergrad in screen and stage, and I not only did I make so many great connections, I learned so much on how to write. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know how to write my graphic novel that I wrote without that. And then my master's program was just, if I didn't go to my master's, I wouldn't have my agent that I landed because I met my agent, a friend at my master's program. Like there's just all these little things like with networking and learning. And I was just like it happened the best way it could.
Yeah. Cause it's not just the content that you're learning in the classroom or in the book. It's the whole package, especially with those connections, which is why if you're in those circles, you get to have those relationships with people in those circles. So you're going on this path. Do you feel you had this struggle with honoring your family as you were driving towards those dreams?
No, because I married an Indian doctor.
Well, before you married him.
Absolutely. I felt good that I was taking care of myself, meaning that I wasn't getting money from my parents from a very young age. I was able to be pretty independent. So that made me feel like, okay, I can do whatever I want. When I was doing stand-up, of course, parts of me felt guilty because I'm on stage making dick jokes and my parents are just like, oh God, Jody, like why are you posting this and posting that? And I was on a podcast called Ladies of the 80s and we had this podcast and it was about sex life, love life and sex in LA, and like, oh, my parents don't want me on that podcast, like
right.
What will people say? And they're not even that like
conservative.
Yeah. And so obviously, or else I would have probably like locked me at home with half the stuff I was doing. So yes, to some extent, but then I always had this like random instinct that like, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I'm a very easygoing person. And so I'm just like a go with the flow kind of person. I've always been that way. Mm-hmm. So I'll be fine.
I think it's so interesting how in Indian culture and maybe other brown cultures too, marriage gives you this like ticket out of things, meaning like, oh, now you're married, go ahead, do whatever you want, because at least you're married. Did you feel like that was the case for you?
100%. As long as he's okay with it.
Right.
Which my husband finds hilarious because we don't have that kind of relationship where it's like, oh, a permission-based relationship. We kind of do our own things. We're independent people and we support each other. And so he thinks it's so funny if my parents, like one time I did this like backless photo shoot for my tattoo. So I was like,
yes, which was topless. Beautiful.
I was topless, right? My mom was like, oh my God, you're showing so much skin. What did Bunny say? I was like, oh, he said it was hot. He liked it. I thought it was really nice. And he's okay with you posting it? Yeah, he's fine with me posting it, Mom, because he respects what I do and he loves it. He's like, cool. And so now, like, they don't question it, but Bunny's always like, oh, yeah, I let her.
He gave you the permission.
I'm like, yeah, Bunny let me wear that dress the other day.
Yes, that's so funny. By the way, you and your husband are definitely hashtag marriage goals. What I see with the two of you is love. I see a loving marriage. And because we know that marriage, just like any relationship, is difficult. It has its ups and downs. But what I see all the time, whether it's things are going well or not, is that you truly love each other. What advice would you give to people who want a loving marriage?
Okay. Accept your partner for where they are, not where they want them to be. 100%. They're not always going to be where you are. And you need to like accept that. You can't just like push people. The other thing I would say is the most important thing about marriage, like even over intimacy, like sexual intimacy, is friendship. If you guys aren't best friends, that love isn't going to like be there, because I can go to my husband and talk to him about anything. Is he always going to like the things I have to say? Absolutely not. But he will always respect me and support me and give me guidance in a positive direction in a kind way. And I think that's so important, because you don't want to feel judged by your spouse ever, you know? And I feel like if you feel judged by your spouse, like you need to revisit that and like figure out why. Also resentment. Resentment is a big thing in marriage. And that's something we don't hold for each other, because I think it just comes down to us understanding that like my goals, his goals, what we want. We like talk about what we want all the time, like our futures. And like, we look back and we go, wow, 10 years ago, we said we were going to be doing this and we're doing, and then growing together. And you don't always have to be together. That's the other thing. Yeah. Like my husband does not do yoga with me. Okay. He won't go to like a bar class. He won't like, we don't work out. There's stuff we do together. We love watching movies together. We love, you know, now he's really into Love is Blind with me. So that's kind of cool. We go hiking together. We love playing video games, you know, and just being with the kids and being parents. And even this weekend, we went away to Philly for one night. It was the first time we left our kids in 2 years, first time we ever left Golu. And we felt like we were gone for like a week, because we were like, oh my God, we miss them so much.
Aww.
And I have to go to South by Southwest next week. And instead of going for like 4 days, which is what I was supposed to do, I can't. I was like, I'm going for 2 days max. I can't leave them for more than two.
Aww.
Yeah, my heart won't let me.
Yeah. I feel like that in itself is a bold move, because I feel like other moms feel this pressure that if they're not with their kids, they should fully do, you know, whatever they're involved with and kind of put aside maybe those feelings of I should be with the kids, because then they feel like a feminist or whatever.
It's not
really
like a feeling of guilt. It's not a feeling of guilt at all. Because I know
they're just love. You want to swish them.
I just want to swish my baby.
Yes.
You know, I just like miss them.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. So I'm like, wow, I'm so attached. So like, they're fine. They don't, right. You know, they're not like calling me every 5 seconds. And I'm over here like, oh, what are they doing now?
Aw. Okay. The other big, bold thing that I saw you do is start Sober Daisy. And for people who don't know, because I'm seeing other people, I'm seeing white people do it too, where they're like going sober. And then all these products have come out in the past few years for like mocktail mixes and things like that. Tell us a little bit about it, but then how people have responded to you personally who are like new to this concept, because it's not like you are this drunken fool making stupid mistakes being drunk.
Sometimes. So I actually spoke at a gala recently for South Asian Americans for Change. That's why I went to Philly. And at that gala, you know, this topic came up with sobriety. So I've been sober for 3 years now, over 3 years. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, was I always blackout drunk? Absolutely not. There were times I can totally handle my alcohol, like have a glass of wine or have a drink. But there were other times where I also couldn't handle my alcohol, and it was a nice mix. And did I have a drink almost every weeknight? Yes. Like I was dependent on having a nightcap, especially after pandemic, like during pandemic, drinking alone and all of that. And like drinks getting stronger, my tolerance getting higher. So all that was coming into play. My sleep getting worse, my anxiety getting worse, made me, in my anxiety, making me a worse parent, making me want to drink another drink. And then, you know, it's just a vicious cycle. But I never questioned it because everyone drank like that. And then, and I said this at the gala the other day, and I was like, and then I realized I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholism is a spectrum. It's not what media shows you. You can't, just because you're not homeless on the floor with a brown paper bag doesn't mean you're not an alcoholic. And the sad truth is a lot of our generation and our peers are all high functioning walking alcoholics. And if you feel like you have to have a drink at 5 p.m. every day, that's a sign of alcoholism. And it's something to be explored. Now, does that mean that you have to fully quit drinking and be sober like me? No, but it may mean that you need to just question your relationship with alcohol, where it stands, and what you think might be better for you. Sometimes we use alcohol as a coping mechanism, especially in parenthood. We're told like, oh, I have to drink because of my children, and this whole mommy wine culture. Let's take our wine glasses to the park. Let's go trick-or-treating, but let's all take beers. Like, alcohol has become such a huge part of our culture as parents, parent culture, which is just so, when you're on this side of sobriety, when you're on this side of the, you know, of the sober side, you look back at the you did and you're like, what the was I thinking? The fact that I would drink at night, right? Okay, so I had two cocktails before bed. What if one of the kids had an emergency at night? What would I do? Right. Would I drive? What would I, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a parent, I put myself in situations that compromise my children's safety in that way, right? So like, even if we're quote unquote, you know, on a play date and having mimosas, because that was a common thing.
Right.
What if something happened?
Right.
What do we do? And so, you know, you're be like, oh, I didn't drink that much. I can get behind the wheel, right? But could you? And those little things came up. So Sober This E is something I created as a community of, because I didn't see a lot of people like that look like me, representation in the sobriety realm. And so I created that space because I want people to see, like, I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to be vulnerable and share my story with you and see if it resonates. A lot of people are triggered by Sober This E because they're like, you weren't even a real alcoholic kind of thing. Like, you know, you just, and other people are like, thank you so much because I've been sober for 2 years. I've been sober for a year. I've done this for 6 months. I completed dry January. Then people are like, I only have one drink a week now. Amazing. Like, that's all I want you to do is like question your relationship with alcohol. Look at your intention behind drinking. Is it to celebrate? Great. Is it because you're sad? Not so great. You know, just those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think what has been great is because you put it out there and you put yourself out there, I wonder if there are moms or other people who are watching, like, I've never even thought about, do I need alcohol in my life, or what does it even look like to be sober? And to, because I think that is countercultural to say, I don't want to have a drink. And I personally dislike the taste of, I feel like maybe I'm allergic to alcohol because when I drink it, I'm like, just, I wonder if you've given people courage to go on that journey. So thank you for doing that, because I think that's amazing.
One of my good friends, Piles, on the other side of alcohol is freedom. Sobriety is truly just freedom. The weight lifts off your shoulders and you're like, oh, I don't have to worry about this anymore.
Right.
Such that's a mental, like, it's so freeing.
Yeah. That's so awesome. So as you've encountered California culture, mom culture, Chicago cold, Illinois culture, Burmese culture, and you know, like, you've been in a lot of different spaces, and you said earlier, you know, the way that you saw faith in different places, it's expressed differently. Has any specific faith or belief system informed your outlook in life?
I think Buddhism is what we relate to the most in my family and for myself. It's just like Buddhism isn't really a religion. It's a way of life. It's a way of living. And this whole concept of like non-attachment, and it really is about like not stressing, right? Finding the peace and the calm, doing things that like fuel your soul. Sobriety is a big part of Buddhism. No drinking, no smoking, no adultery, those kinds of things. There's this whole like seeing, you know, seeing the good in people, knowing that, understanding like intention versus, you know, you can't always think that someone has malintent. Sometimes, especially that's really nice in relationships. Dr. Becky Goodman wrote a book called Good Inside. I think it relates really deeply to that. And it's about everyone's born good inside. So if we see them that way, then we maybe see their actions as not so bad. Maybe see where they're coming from, put yourself in their shoes kind of thing.
Yeah.
My dad doesn't kill anything. He'll like take the spider in a cup, go take it outside kind of thing.
Yeah.
He'll run around the house catching a moth.
Aww. That's really sweet. I mean, I wouldn't do that, but that's really sweet.
No, I know. Me neither. Get out of my house. Moth.
Okay, another mark of brown culture is curry plants. Do you have a curry plant?
Yes.
Does it have a name?
No, it's so it was my father-in-law's. My father-in-law passed away a year and a half ago, and I adopted it and have kept that curry plant flourishing. Yes. And so I'll send you a picture because it is just massive. It's a tree.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents, theirs is like a tree. It's not a plant. And mine, every year, like it would kind of die in the winter and get spider mites, and then we try and revive it. So it's been a
once
thing.
You get it going, it can stay. Like you just have to give it love, and also rice water. Soak rice in water and then take that water and put it in the plant.
So raw rice water, not cooked rice water.
Raw rice water.
Oh, that is a good tip right there. It's okay, so I gotta try that. Okay, if you had a choice, coffee, chai, British tea is when you put hot water. Water, like what is your beverage of choice?
Coffee, 100%.
Yeah. How do you take yours?
With oat milk.
Would you?
I like my coffee with a little bit of cream, not my cream with coffee. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm the same way too. And artificial creamers are not my thing because I can taste like the preservatives in it.
Mm-hmm. Like the French vanilla, like kind of.
Right.
I also love a good honey lavender latte.
What would you say to 18-year-old Jyothi based on what you know today?
Oh, man. I'd be like, dude, wait till you see yourself in 10 years. It's going to get
be so much more awesome. Because I'm sure you thought you were awesome at 18, because don't we all?
No. Oh, my God. No, I had the worst mental depression at 18. I actually had it slow. A lot of it's going to – I'm actually going to, like, tell more of that story as my book comes out, because a lot of the book has elements of my own, obviously, like adolescent downfall. I had my lowest low at 18, and I started therapy then, and was diagnosed with generalized anxiety and panic disorder and depression. And I really didn't, I couldn't visualize my life because I really didn't think I would make it.
Wow.
And so to see myself from 18 to 28 would have been like, no way is that my life. No way do I have that beautiful baby and that like sweet husband. And oh, I'm writing? Like, okay. Like if 18-year-old me could see my life today, she wouldn't believe it. She would have been like, what? That's wild. Yeah. I've come a long way. And I'm really like, it's a story that I wasn't planning on sharing publicly, like honestly ever. And when I wrote the book, I was like talking to my husband, who's a pediatric psychiatrist. He was like, your story of like where you were and how far you came can help so many adolescents. And I was like, you're right. Like, it's okay to like be vulnerable and share these things. And so I really can't wait to like now, you know, kind of tell where I came from and how life changed for me and what kind of steps I took to get there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thanks for sharing and being vulnerable. Have you read the book they call This Exceptional?
Oh, it's so good. Prachi Gupta. So good. So beautiful. Yeah. She's such a brave woman for writing that book. I respect her so much.
I'm halfway through it now. So as I'm listening to you, you know, because she in the beginning says, I was going to write this as a novel, but then I felt like I wouldn't do it justice.
So that hit me really hard because I did write my book as a graphic novel, but my reasoning was because I really wanted to set it in present time to relate to adolescents today. Social media, and you know, I threw in a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And so I have no regrets on that because I'm still going to tell my story in my own way through my socials.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, your life with us, and how you repeatedly share your life with us on the socials. You are an inspiration, and I'm so glad that you got to join us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Being Brown and Bold podcast. Check out our links at beingbrownandbold.com to see a listing of all our shows. You can always find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the web. We'll be back again to drop our next episode with another uplifting conversation. If this podcast or episode resonates with you, would you help us and share it with others? Until next time, from all of us, be wise and be bold.